A rescued seal pup is released back into the wild, and the director of the Haynes Museum is moving on. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Sheldon Museum in Haynes will be looking for a new director. Current museum director Jerry Clark recently gave notice to borough manager Mark Ernest. She said she will stay on until a new director is hired or until January, whichever comes first.
I feel like it's time to change, to have a change for the museum and a change for me.
Clark said a culmination of things led to her resignation, but moving closer to family in the lower 48 and continuing her archaeology work in Egypt were two of her main reasons. She's traveled to Egypt several times in the last few years to work on a project that will create an organized storage for researchers.
And I've put a lot of heart and time into this project in Egypt. It'll be my seventh trip with the same archaeologist to the same site. The team varies from year to year, but it's the same director and the same site every year. And he and I are creating an organized storage that researchers can use. He wants to turn it into a research center. It's where the very first pharaohs were. So it's the beginning of the pharaonic period. And it's very interesting. There's no King Tut gold there, but a lot of very interesting history.
Clark has worked on and off in Alaska for the past 28 years. She first came to Haynes in 1997 to work on a grant-funded project at the Sheldon Museum. And in 2007, she replaced Addison Fields as director. Clark said her focus in her career has been mostly with curating and collections. She said she's proud of several projects the museum has accomplished since she came on board as director.
We've accomplished a lot. We did a big overhaul of the exhibits, and they're all refreshed and interesting. We have the six-week spotlight series that Addison Field actually started, has taken off, and has become very popular. We've had some fabulous exhibits.
But now, she said, the museum is ready for someone with an eye toward funding and finances. Funding is a constant challenge for nonprofits like the museum, Clark said. She'd been thinking about leaving her post for a while, but reduced appropriations this year from the borough helped her realize this was the right time. She said she envisions a new director that will have strong business and finance skills to maneuver the nonprofit funding landscape.
And we've taken to the museum to a point where I feel it's necessary for someone who's more versed in writing business plans and doing more the business side. I'm a collections person, exhibits. I'm a curator. And the other things I've been learning to do, but it'd be good to have someone in who knows how to do it.
The Sheldon director oversees 5 part-time employees and numerous volunteers. They work with an estimated $250,000 budget. The museum is a borough entity, and the borough provides most of the funding for personnel. The museum uses grants and donations to cover the rest of its operation costs. Clark said she believes the museum is in a good place to continue its service in the community and hopefully grow.
I'd like to see the museum grow. The museum is a valuable part of the community. It's where it stores and preserves the history of the community, as is the library. They're like the heart and soul of any community. Wherever I go, the library and the museum are what keeps the community together, I think.
The borough has yet to begin advertising the museum director position. A harbor seal rescued off a Haynes beach earlier this year was released back into the wild near Juneau last week. The harbor seal was found May 2nd by Tracy Mikowski, who works at the Haynes Animal Rescue Kennel. She was walking her dogs early in the morning on a Mud Bay beach when she first came across the pup. It was up on the rocks and getting attacked by birds. She brought the pup with her into town, and she and Steve Vick, director of HARC, contacted various wildlife authorities before getting in touch with the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward. Within hours, the center had arranged for the pup to be flown to Juneau and on to the center. Sea Life staff determined the pup was probably born premature and abandoned by its mother. For the next 4 months, the seal was cared for at the Sea Life Center with a goal of eventually releasing her back into the wild.
You know, as long as they check out healthy-wise and that they have meet all our criteria to be able to survive back in the wild, they all are release candidates from the time they come into the door.
That's Tim Liebling, stranding coordinator of the Sea Life Center, speaking when the pup was first rescued. During her time at the center, the pup was kept from too much human interaction. She was named Olympia after the 2012 Summer Olympics. She was kept with other seals, competed for fish for food, and gained 53 pounds. Last week, she and another orphaned harbor seal named Peekaboo were flown to Juneau, along with Sea Life Center staff. The center contacted Makowski to see if she would like to come to the release. Makowski went along with local veterinarian Betsy Lyons, who used to work with the Sea Life Center. A large crowd of schoolchildren gathered at Falls Outer Point near Juneau to watch the release. Makowski opened the crate for Olympia, but both seals took their time venturing out onto the rocks. Makowski said it took about 45 minutes for the seals to enter the water. They kept looking back for a time, but eventually swam off as the students watched. Both seals were tagged on their rear flippers so the Sea Life Center could track or identify them if they were ever contacted again. We've posted a link to the video of the release on our KHNS news page at khns.org. The Forest Service is seeking public comment on a proposal to close a dozen recreation cabins on the Tongass National Forest. All of the cabins are located in wilderness areas. Sue Jennings, a recreation planner with the Forest Service, says there are almost 150 recreation cabins on the Tongass, and they are getting increasingly more expensive to maintain.
As you know, funds are going down, the budget's lower, and so we have to figure out how to maintain the cabins with what we have, and that's based on how people pay cabin fees to stay at the cabin, how much money we get through Congress. And so the lower-use cabins, we're looking at whether or not to remove them, or some of them we're talking about converting them to shelters as opposed to cabins, because shelters are less to maintain.
Nine other recreation cabins are slated for complete removal. Jennings says many are dilapidated and have not been used for years. Other cabins proposed for removal include those near Ketchikan, Thorne Bay, Wrangell, Petersburg, and Yakutat. Cabins near Haines and Skagway should remain. Jennings said the selections were made based on maintenance needs and level of public use. She says the Forest Service is interested in hearing from the public on the proposed closures.
We truly want your comments. If there's a cabin on the list that you say, oh no, that's my favorite cabin, let me know that. These the right 12, or should we retain some of them because they're a place where you think, well, maybe we can get more use, or maybe there's something else we could do there to get more people to go to these cabins and pay the fees so that we can afford to maintain them.
If the proposed plan is adopted, 143 cabins and 43 shelters will remain on the Tongass for public use. You can find a link to the Sustainable Cabin Management Program for the Tongass and maps of the cabin locations posted with this story on the KHNS News webpage. Today's primary election may confuse some Southeast voters. That's because legislative boundaries have changed, in some cases shifting candidates and communities. That's especially true for Haines and Skagway, which are now in different districts. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld explains some of the major alterations.
Let's start at the northern end of Southeast. Under redistricting, Yakutat voters are part of a House district stretching west through Prince William Sound to Kodiak. The Northern Southeast Communities Senate District goes further, all the way to Dillingham on Bristol Bay. For years, the town has been in Southeast-based legislative districts stretching down to Prince of Wales Island and a few points south. Now, let's move to the southern end of the panhandle. Metlakatla now shares a district with Sitka, plus a number of villages and small cities that, till now, largely stood in a House district of their own. Around the region's center is Petersburg. Residents have been politically linked to Sitka, Wrangell, and Ketchikan for years, but the new boundaries, which Petersburg strongly protested, make it part of a Juneau district that also includes Gustavus, Tenakee, and Skagway. Those towns also switched from another district. Ketchikan is still the dominant community in its districts, though the House seat adds Wrangell. Likewise, Sitka is its House district's largest community, but that district has lost Petersburg and gained more than a dozen villages and small cities. If you've got that all figured out, note that the official names have also changed. Southeast House districts used to be 1 through 5, now they're 31 through 34. Southeast Senate districts used to be A, B, and C. Now, they're P and Q. And if you notice, the number of seats doesn't add up. You're right. Southeast lost one House and one Senate seat in the redistricting process. That will leave it with 6 instead of 8 people in the legislature. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka, which is now in House District 34 and Senate District Q.
It should also be noted that these are just interim boundaries. The state Supreme Court still has to approve a permanent plan, which could be different or the same for Southeast communities. That may or may not happen before 2014. You can find a district boundary map and a list of communities in each district on the State Division of Elections website. It also includes the candidates for each district. Polls close at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, and later in the evening, KHNS will air live state primary election updates from APRN. Tune in from 9 to 11 p.m. for 5-minute segments at the top of each hour covering the latest news on primary results. APRN will also be providing election result updates on its website, aprn.org. Your APRN and KHNS News will bring you election results during our Wednesday newscasts. For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for listening to your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.